Anthony Clairvo, a distinguished playwright, I wanted to talk to you because, for a variety of reasons. One is that we have this weird network of interconnected relationships of mutual friends that we know. But also, you know, just as playwrights, we don't get to hang out together. Playwrights, those are the people we never get to play with in the theater.
It's true. We're like sort of high on the food chain predators where we all need a lot of territory to feed and we can't cross paths without, you know, feeling like starvation is on its way.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 354, playwright Anthony Clairvo. Theatergoers may recognize Anthony Clairvo from his award-winning play Pick Up Axe, or his adaptations of The Brothers Karamazov and The Wild Duck, or his explorations of family in Ambition Facing West and Let's Play 2, or his contemporary looks at security and insecurity in Our Practical Heaven and Control-Alt-Delete. His plays have been produced at theaters around the country, from Trinity Rep to the Denver Theater Center to South Coast Rep to the Eureka Theater in San Francisco, and including many theaters where we've performed too, like Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park, Repertory Theater St. Louis, San Jose Rep, and Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts. And yet, despite us traveling in similar circles and having many friends and colleagues in common, Anthony and I had never met until a few weeks ago, when he was good enough to sit down with me and talk about his life as a playwright and the challenges and rewards of theatrical storytelling.
How did you become a playwright? Why did you become a playwright? Did nobody try to talk you out of it? And how did you become a playwright when you went to a college that didn't even have a theater department? How does that work?
Because I was one before then.
Okay.
I guess I really did start out as a kid, sort of roping other kids into shows in the backyard. And then when we moved to a place where there weren't enough other kids, I became a puppeteer for a while and made my own actors. Then was in schools that, to some degree, supported theater, and so you wrote the middle school play.
Oh.
And so on, and was so consumed by it that I really was concerned, and when I say I mean my parents, that might be all I ever did, that I would go off to college and just do that, which is, of course, not a way for a person to have a life or make a living. And so I decided, in this sort of jujitsu educational philosophy, to go somewhere where I could only do things that I wasn't interested in, and that way, you know, play against my own strengths.
Interesting.
And so,
yeah. Was that a way of weeding out other possibilities?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. That I would inevitably have to become a lawyer with a hobby.
Yeah, right. Okay.
In community theater, and so off I went, eschewing Berkeley and Stanford. And went to Princeton thinking that there I would be safe. Unfortunately, we did not factor into this. This is how long ago it was and how little we knew. We didn't really know where Princeton was. We thought the Ivy League was just, you know, tucked into Massachusetts someplace. And so the fact that I was sending the application off to New Jersey was shock number one.
Should have been the first warning.
Right.
Yeah.
But then discovered freshman week that I was a mere one-hour train ride from New York City, and thus my destruction was complete.
Oh, my God. Was this before they had the McCarter there?
No, this was in the McCarter. I ushered at the McCarter.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
And so there was that, of course, but students had only a very... Ushering was about the most you did.
Interesting.
But I found myself spending more and more time than in New York. In fact, wound up actually having an apartment in New York and spending half my time there and then going down to school for half the time.
Wow.
And doing theater in New York and really beginning to write more seriously. But what it meant was then it actually gave direction. Once I discovered that I was not going to be a lawyer, because I was at Princeton at the same time as Elena Kagan, that's what a lawyer's like.
right.
My mistake.
Yes.
I just like arguing ethics in public.
What? So, and So you had this experience of writing plays. Can playwriting be taught?
Given how much of it I, how much time I spend attempting to teach it, I'm going to say yes, absolutely. It is all a learnable skill. Sure, you know, there's a predisposition to it. Basically, it helps if you're, you know, conflicted and argumentative.
And hear voices.
And hear voices. I'm hearing some now. If you enjoy a lot of things about theater but can actually tolerate not having the spotlight on you.
Yeah.
In fact, if it's actually better if the spotlight is not on you, then yeah, absolutely. And I was really self-taught, by which I mean I learned from so many playwrights whose plays I was watching and reading, right, and dissecting with as much detail as I could, but really spent very little time in playwriting classes myself.
Okay.
Evolved a method, had the good fortune to be involved with a bunch of theater people about my age when I got back to the Bay Area, the folks we know in common.
Right, right.
Who gave me a chance to hear things and try things out for a little while and figure that, yeah, I wasn't completely off base.
Yeah.
And go forward from there. But really it's the will.
Okay.
As much as anything, just the decision that that's what you want to try to be, because heaven knows, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many ways does the world tell us that really that's not a good decision
yes.
to make? Bad choices.
Well, and so you say you were doing puppets as a kid, and that strikes a chord with me because I too did puppet shows in kindergarten.
Oh, for him to say.
So you wanted to tell stories.
I wanted to tell stories. I wanted to think about stuff that bothered me.
Okay.
Really, for me, more than story, it was issues and not like necessarily current events issues,
right,
but bodies of knowledge that I was curious about, themes that interested me, that I really felt like if I can be passionate about this, mm-hmm. if I can think passionately and feel in a kind of directed way, right, that would make for an interesting spectacle.
That's so cool. What is the challenge in finding a narrative, finding a story when you approach it theme first?
That is the $64,000 question if we ever made that much from playwriting. It's to then go, all right, this is what I'm thinking about. These are characters who are deeply engaged in whatever that is. And now what's the arc of that event?
Yeah.
And different things at different times, but that's what I grapple with probably the most. You have put your finger on it, is then how does this progress from event to event to event,
right,
while simultaneously exploring the thing that got me obsessed in the first place.
Well, it's fascinating. I mean, playwrights don't get to hang out together. We also don't get to talk to each other,
no,
you know, for this reason. So, I mean, we have the same challenge. We'll, you know, in writing our plays, and I'm using plays in air quotes because I'm sitting here talking to a real, genuine playwright.
Ha 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 ha. Yes, right. Sure, like you are not actually involved in the same thing. Yeah.
Well, we approach. I know writers. I said I had a character who was speaking to me, and you're talking about ideas, and we're talking about subject matter.
Right.
You know that it all starts, but always it's finding those voices. Do you often find that you go in with one opinion and you find a character espousing the responsible opposing viewpoint, and you change your own mind?
Sure, absolutely, or at least broaden my view.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like if I get into something and I, you know, and by midway through I feel about it and think about it exactly the same as I did when I began, then mm-hmm. clearly I haven't gone far enough. Mm-hmm. It's not interesting enough.
Yeah.
Then it's a question too easily resolved. So yeah, I do look for that pushback, and yes, I do often find that, you know, the structural antagonist becomes my point of view character right about midway through, when I'm sick to death of whoever the, you know, hero was supposed to be,
right,
his issues, and tired of the subject matter and want to be done with it. It's like, right, why was this a good idea in the first place? No.
And does that change everything? Does the protagonist then become the hero?
Things have switched around and switched around such that it's often difficult to tell who is the central focal character of plays of mine.
That's
they
cool.
turn out to be a lot about ensemble finding itself, communities
yeah.
discovering themselves. So basically, I watch Seven Samurai pretty much every time.
everybody. I'm Frank Malacota. I'm the morning anchor at Channel 5, CBS Channel 5, KPIX in San Francisco. And I always listen to the Reduce Shakespeare podcast.
Where can you RSE the RSE? Our fall 2013 kicks off this week with a performance of The Complete World of Sports Abridged tomorrow night in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, and our UK tour of The Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged resumes again in the UK this Thursday night at the Westacre Theatre in Norfolk, which I believe is already sold out. Plus performances in Hong Kong, Singapore, Cincinnati, and around the US this fall. It's going to be a very, very busy autumn. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com, click on the link to subscribe, and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information.
All right, so you talk about ensemble, so that brings us to the fact that we have to discuss that necessary evil. Actors.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thoughts, pro, con?
Yes. All of the above. Well, you know, we are both deeply involved with them. We have been them. Mm-hmm. The great thing is when you create an opportunity for somebody else to express their creativity. I try to create blueprints for occasions.
Yeah.
And opportunities for people to bring the most of their talent to an evening. And so it's wonderful that. And just to be able to sit back and watch and listen turns out to be a perennial joy that I never expected. I always thought, I can't imagine myself not acting myself. Huh? And being able to delegate that and have, you know, that voice coming out of a bunch of different people,
right,
in a bunch of different variations is just great.
What about directors? Now, I'll preface this by saying I've long believed, and I'm not sure that I'm right or wrong, about that if a playwright has any directing ability whatsoever, he should direct the first production of his play. Now, maybe I have never worked with the right director. I know I've worked with at least one wrong director. And so, what do you think?
We all, sure.
We all.
But we try not to be bitter. I tend to feel that the first playwright should be around and kibitz so much that he makes the first director's life a misery. Or at least that seems to be what I do.
Well, that's interesting because that's what happened to me when I was as part of the director's wing of the Writers' Theater in New York in the late 80s. Mm. The playwrights made my life a living hell and would never do what I told them to do when I was directing their work.
Exactly. Those ungrateful sons of guns. Yeah. Now, I have never found that single director who has been, you know, my long-term collaborator. I've worked with a lot of people like three times.
Yeah.
Part of it is it's casting.
Yes, it is.
I do a lot of different kinds of work, and somebody who's just fantastic for one thing, they're not a good match,
yeah,
for the other. I need somebody who's going to be as interested in something as I am, and I don't necessarily know who that's going to be ahead of time. So I really look for that spark from somebody,
right,
who's going to bring something to it that I didn't expect.
Right.
And I do feel like I've been lucky to work with really, you know, remarkable, imaginative, creative directors who also have the ability to facilitate in, you know, a psychological and a managerial way, you know, the process of however other many people there are in,
yeah,
the production, which I just don't have the bandwidth for.
Right, right.
So their ability to express themselves, to create something that says what they want to say, while at the same time getting everybody else to that place, right, at that time, it's remarkable to me.
How much do you feel like you have to make sure the director is not imposing a vision, mm-hmm, his own concept, onto a new play that hopefully has its own vision?
Well, you know, I got some great advice really, really early on from Roxanne Rogers, Sam Shepard's sister,
okay,
who says, you know, when you're young, especially, or whatever, taking another step up in your career, you're going to be so eager for somebody to say, I love your play, that you're just willing to say, great, let's get married. And you know, before you begin, just make sure that you and the director are working on the same play.
Yeah.
And so whenever somebody says, I love your play, I always say, what do you love about it? Tell me it back to me. And if what they're saying is something that's only tangentially, you know, what I'm trying to do, then, you know, I try to have the discipline to say, you know what, great. Let's, you know, let's keep talking about something down the line. But I have a feeling that we're just going to make each other crazy.
That's the other thing we have in common. We know we've worked with a lot of the same directors. Richard E. T. White,
yes,
one of the finest professors of theater that I ever had. He was at Cal when I was.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Charles Towers, mm-hmm. Ed Stern, Stephen Wolfe.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and yes,
we have trod all the same boards.
We have trod many the same boards, and yeah, so it's well, you know, the American theater is a community.
Yeah.
And yes, there are different neighborhoods, and you know, yes, some people get to live in, you know, the nicer neighborhoods, and some are, you know, doing what we can in cardboard boxes, but we do run across people a lot. It's one of the great things about it. And so I'm constantly, since Facebook, amazed to go, like, right now there is a production going on in the Bay Area of Other Desert Cities, Robbie Bates's play, at TheaterWorks, in which two of the actors have played the same role in two different productions of a play of mine 10 years apart.
Oh, cool. And we have more connections. We share a publisher.
Yes, we do.
And yet I have never seen you at any of the Broadway play publishing Christmas parties.
It's true. I get together with Christopher Gould, Kip, every few years for lunch. But again, he does maintain very well, as in my case at least, the policy of, you know, not too many playwrights in the same room.
Yeah.
Blood will be shed.
Yeah. Yeah, right. This is a good idea. And well, and here we are on the West Coast. So is that why I don't see either of our names in the Dramatists Guild magazine anywhere near as much as I think what we should?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I don't. I've gone beyond the point of pushing those things. I will also say, apropos of our having the same publisher, that we have the same publisher in the sense that Kip has said on at least one occasion that he can only afford to publish people like me because of the reduced Shakespeare company.
Well, that's enormously flattering. As one-third of the reduced Shakespeare company, we are happy to bankroll your career.
Absolutely. Mr. Midlist says thank you so much.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. You can purchase Anthony Clarvo's scripts and license them for production at Broadway Play Publishing. Their website is Broadway Play Pubble, P-U-B-L, BroadwayPlayPubble.com. Then send us your thoughts about actors and directors via email to feedback@ReducedShakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, Necessary Evil Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Sally Dix. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to another Bay Area treasure, Frank Malicote, morning anchor of CBS-TV KPIX in San Francisco. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Tichner, 354 1060 seconds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
It occurs to me that we distinguished playwrights of a certain age with a full head of wavy gray hair. We have to stick together.
We do indeed.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less. So much less.